Welcome, friends. This is Red Ice Creations Radio. Thank you for tuning in to our broadcast. We are recording from Sweden. My name is Henrik Palmgren. I'm the editor and webmaster of RedIceCreations.com, a website dedicated to news, research, and exploration of all kinds of topics and areas that we consider to be not only interesting but also of great importance. So stop by our website often, check out our many different sections that we got up there, much to read, see, and of course listen to. Also check out our forum and join in on the discussion. This radio program is online with a new show every Thursday and Sunday. If you want to backtrack, just head into our archives and tune in. And today I have the pleasure of welcoming back to the show researcher Kent Daniel Bentkowski, or Kentroversy as he's more known as, I guess. His website, of course, is kentroversypapers.net. And I hope that you were with us during our first show that we did back in January. It's great to sync up with Kent again and to be able to dedicate an entire show here to a very important topic. Or a person, I guess. This is about potential president in 2008, Hillary Clinton. And Kent wrote an excellent article a while back entitled Hillary Clinton's Hidden Agenda of Manipulation. And we are going to dive into that today and try to dissect this upcoming presidential candidate and get some of Kent's personal views and a whole lot more. So it's a pleasure to welcome you back to the program, Kent, and thank you for coming on. How are you today, Kent?
Well, I'm doing very well today, Henrik. Thank you for having me on the show again. I greatly appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Kent. It's great to have you back. You know, this is a very interesting topic, and I'm very glad that we're going to spend some time on this today. And to kind of get into things here, I'd like to read a few of the paragraphs of your article, starting like this. The elite handlers of Hillary Clinton will be presenting a hidden agenda of manipulation in an attempt to overcome her highly negative image in the minds of those in New York State whom she has represented in the United States Senate. To overcome this highly negative image with voters, a carefully manufactured popularity will be presented by placing her in front of a hand-picked audience where nothing will be left to chance. And it goes on to say, now that Hillary Clinton's hidden agenda of manipulation has been unveiled, it is time to begin examining this matter under the microscope of logic and verifiable facts. She is such a divisive and unlikable person that this entire presidential run is going to have to be carefully orchestrated. I will be here every step of the way, where at appropriate times throughout the campaign, I will comment on and describe what is happening. The best way to learn about this manipulation via the mass media is to watch it develop before our very eyes. And that sounds a very good approach, Kent.
Yeah, what happened is I wanted to look at this through the perspective of my previously working on a local congressman's re-election campaigns, which I had done in my college years and in my early adult years from 1981 to 1988. Mm-hmm. And who I'm referring to here is Congressman Jack Kemp, who in 1988 ran for the Republican nomination for president.
Mm-hmm.
I actually have a side of my family who is involved in the Illuminati.
Yeah.
I have a cousin who in 1986 married a man who now owns a company. At this point, controls 22 different subsidiaries, and they are extremely wealthy.
Hmm.
And speaking with these people, whom my cousin had become involved with through marriage, I learned as early as 1988, while Jack Kemp was running for president, that not only would he not get the nomination, but that George Bush Sr. would be the next president.
Hmm.
In between the Bush junior and senior presidencies, there would be a Democrat that would be in office, and this would all be orchestrated and controlled to where in 2000 election we would have George Bush Jr. becoming president. And when I had heard this, this was in 1988, so you're talking a good, you know, 12 years beforehand of what was going to be taking place. And what actually did transpire is exactly what I was told.
And you were told this directly by this person that your cousin married?
That's correct.
Very interesting.
And so what happened is, as I said, George Bush Jr. was said to be being groomed for the presidency as early as 1988. And this was before his ownership of the Texas Rangers baseball team. This was before he became governor of Texas. And in this article about Hillary Clinton, I do mention George P. Bush, who is the son of Jeb Bush, former governor of Florida, how he is presently being groomed to become the first Hispanic American president.
So,
and this will play into the high level of illegal immigration that we have coming into the country from Mexico at the current time. So by the time he becomes ready for that presidential run, it will seem like a natural thing, just like it is now, that we should vote for a woman as president.
So at that point, maybe he even might become president of the entire American continent, I guess.
Yeah, the North American Union.
Yeah, exactly.
Unfortunately, that may be very true.
Yeah. In regards to Jeb Bush's son, George P. Bush, have you, is this an inside tip, so to speak, also, or is this your kind of hunch or interpretation of the of how this will play out?
Yes, it's both.
It's both, okay. Okay, yeah. So heads up on that. That's a very interesting...
My interpretation of some inside information.
Okay, I see. Yeah, very interesting. So that's something to definitely keep an eye on. And in regards to this Hillary thing, this was something that you mentioned back in 2002, I guess, right?
Yeah, what happened is after 9/11... I started to compile a dossier on Hillary Clinton because what began to happen was a series of articles appeared in the Buffalo News, where I'm from, and it would talk about, you know, is Hillary the proper person to become a woman candidate for president who could actually be elected? And so I started collecting these articles and putting them together in this dossier. So once I started to read the articles and to understand, as I had just explained, how far in advance these people are groomed, what I did at that point is begin to speak publicly to people and ask them, do you believe Hillary is electable? Would you vote for her? And in September of 2002, which I have a screenshot in the article itself, I do identify on a message board Hillary Clinton, first future woman, first president of the United States, who would be a woman.
That's very interesting. So that's more than an interpretation at that point, because you have inside information. So you are convinced at this point that Hillary will be the president in 2008, I guess.
Yes. Not only that, it will be a two-term presidency.
Interesting. Any ideas on who she will be, who she will come up against? I mean, I think Alex Jones have talked a lot about Arnold, but at this point I don't see it, but that might very well happen. Any ideas?
It looked like it might be John McCain, except for in the past week or so, there has been news that have come out of his campaign talking about trouble they've had in raising funds. So at this point in time, there is no front runner in my mind. And I don't think they're going to throw Arnold up there against Hillary because that would represent two sides of the very same agenda. And I think that would be a wasted opportunity for both of them.
Ah, I see what you mean.
In fact, you mentioned a moment ago about George P. Bush becoming president of the North American Union.
Yeah.
That appears to me to be the role that Arnold will play.
Oh, my. Okay. Very interesting. Yeah, they might be holding off on that guy because I guess he is a person also can, I guess, raise a lot of money and actually is very popular in regards to that. He has, you know, starred in so many movies and so forth. And actors seems to be very favorable in an American context, I guess.
Yes, that is true. However, he has made some very damaging statements throughout the years where he has spoken about his admiration for Hitler and how Hitler could control an audience and how he admired that, how he dreamed about being a dictator and having hundreds of millions of people at his beck and call, you know, and under his command.
Yeah.
So that at this point is coming out to be a little negative for him.
Yeah, very much so, absolutely. So let's dive into the area of Hillary Clinton. And of course, in the paragraphs I read at the beginning, you are speaking about the hidden agenda of manipulation in regards to this. And you also outline, I think, you have unveiled for us the tactics that are being used, and I think I'd love to kind of dive into that right away. I mean, what is Hillary Clinton's hidden agenda of manipulation?
Well, first of all, as you did quote in that little piece that you did read from the article, she is a very negative and a very divisive figure in our local area here. And as my senator in the United States Congress, for the past 5 years, I've gone out into the public when I've gone to the grocery store or when I've gone out to dinner or when I've gone to the drugstore or just anywhere, basically. And I would ask people at random, would you vote for Hillary Clinton? And I still, to this day, have not hit a single person to say yes.
Really?
That's correct. Huh. I've asked over 100 people at random, people I do not know, people who are waitresses and work behind counters at stores, people that I run into at the bank, and all over the place. And what these people indicated to me was that if this woman planned on being president, there would have to be a heavily manipulated image presented which would counteract this current very negative image in the public eye. And the only way to do this at this point is through this technique called the Delphi technique. And the Delphi technique was developed so that an audience can be manipulated to arrive at a predetermined consensus through the use of facilitators so that for example, when Hillary Clinton would go on television, it's always going to be in the format of a town hall meeting, and this is because this is the structure and the format of the Delphi technique.
Hmm.
Everything is hand-picked and very carefully orchestrated so that the individual does not receive any negative questions from the audience and is able to very easily control the audience in the way that she responds to the questions that she is asked.
Very interesting. So is this a standard procedure, this Delphi technique that you talk about? Is this kind of a, you know, a historical method that they have been using for a long time?
Yes, it has. It was developed for education and for the purpose of parents and other community people who had come in to try to change the way their children are being taught in local school districts and school board meetings and public hearings related to public education. And in terms of education, this is called the Alinsky method. So they changed the name a little bit.
Okay, I see.
In terms of how this is being used for politics, you see that there is a very careful grooming that takes place with every one of these candidates.
Yeah.
Where they are literally taught how to behave while they're in front of the cameras to elicit the most positive possible response from the target audience.
You call this power stance, right?
Yes.
Tell us about it.
The power stance is a way of the individual standing, and it's also a way of how they use their hands and their fingers to make gestures while they're speaking to underline certain points that they are making in their speech. And basically, if you notice, or if you haven't noticed, look for this in the days and weeks and months ahead, you will see that oftentimes a politician will point to the audience with their thumb where their index finger is draped around their thumb so that they're not actually pointing at anyone. And they do this because it's perceived to be a positive thing from the audience.
Yeah, non-threatening.
It's also perceived as not being, you know, this lady is lecturing me.
So this is psychology 101, I guess.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, one thing that I'm reminded of here is a documentary called Spin by a guy called Brian Springer. Have you seen this?
No, I have not.
I'm gonna make sure that you receive the link so you can watch this, because this is a guy who actually cut together from different satellite feeds. You know, when they cut to commercial in TV station feeds, they're actually still broadcasting through another channel, and they just relay the commercial to, you know, to the regular station, and the feed continues on another station, basically. And when what this guy did, Brian Springer, is that he recorded the feeds, you know, when they're off air, so to speak, when they still sit in front of the camera, and actually are, you know, they're giving pointers, they're giving hints, they're giving notes on how to behave, how to point, what to say, how to say it, and all this stuff that you talk about. So I think that this would be a very interesting and an important, I guess, contribution to that. So I'm going to make sure that you receive that link.
Yeah, thank you very much. That sounds fascinating.
Yeah, it is.
I am looking very forward to seeing that.
Yeah, very, very nice. Yeah, so I'm going to send that along. You know, one thing that you also brought up in your article was how they, I guess, managed to strike two flies in one strike, so to speak, in regards to Bill Clinton and Hillary as the subject of a cheating husband. Tell us about that a little bit.
Yeah, when this is in reference to the Monica Lewinsky situation, and when I saw that happen, I kind of got the impression that it was a manipulated situation, because it was just so bizarre, and it was so different from anything that we had ever seen in terms of, you know, professional behavior in terms of a president. And I looked at that as being not only an opportunity for them to denigrate the office of president and to actually belittle that office in the minds and the hearts of the American public and the people of the world, and also to take the opportunity to make Hillary Clinton look like a persevering, understanding wife who would live through this very negative public affair, which became very prominent in the news during the time it was taking place. And so when I saw that happen, I was thinking in the back of my mind, okay, they definitely have some plans for her, and it's going to unfold in the years ahead. And this was one of the things that kind of got my mind thinking in that direction. And that's when I started to compile the dossier on Hillary.
You know, there is a connection between the Bushes and the Clintons, and then one thing that came to mind was, you know, here in Europe we have our kings and queens and so forth, and that is something that America doesn't have, but it seems like this have been replaced by a political kings and queens, basically, where you know, we're having, I guess, intermarrying political families and stuff like this, but there is a connection, I think, between the Clinton and the Bushes, and tell us more about that.
Yeah, the Bush family and the Clinton family are an interlocked, what I describe as a crime family, and many people agree with this interpretation. For example, all of the children of Barbara and George Bush Sr. are in one way or another experts in certain criminal areas. For example, their son Neil Bush is an expert at stock market and banking fraud, and he played a major role in the savings and loan scandal in the 1980s. And you go through the entire family and you find that every one of the sons participates in one way or another. Within the past 2 years, approximately, the Bushes and the Clintons have made an effort to be photographed and videotaped together at various public events where they are making comments, such as Bill Clinton saying, "Barbara Bush is my adopted mother," and they are seen at these public events standing next to one another and sharing jokes and having a good time. They're being photographed on the golf course and so forth. This was, in my mind, an effort to relate both of these families together in the minds of the people seeing these images, so that they would see Hillary as a natural progression.
Amazing. Yeah, you know, this reminds me also of There have been lots of news in regards to the relationship between Hillary Clinton and Rupert Murdoch, who of course is the, you know, the media mogul behind Fox News and all of, you know, what on the surface are seeming like, you know, conservative media outlets. But do you think that Fox News is something that, you know, they will be able to use in regards to actually later on, I guess, promoting Hillary? At this point, I don't see that the relationship has started to play out in regards to that Fox News are promoting Hillary, but this is something that might change. But are you aware of this kind of relationship between Murdoch and Hillary?
Yes, absolutely. You know, this is very interesting because Fox News is looked upon as being the propaganda arm of the Republican Party here in America. But if we look at it a step backward, if you will, closer to the core, if you will, what we then find is that Fox News are propagandists, period. So if there is some sort of a role to be played here, Rupert Murdoch is perfectly positioned to be the person to do that media preparation, if you will, of Hillary to be president. However, the other thing about this is that they try to carefully manipulate people into believing that there are differences between the Republicans and the Democrats.
Sure, yeah.
And so that may not be anything more than a financing situation in terms of seeing her like pasted all over Fox News you know, daily. I'm not sure we'll see that.
Sure.
But we'll certainly see an influx of funding coming in from that direction to her campaign, which we've already seen.
Yeah. Very interesting. Yeah, again, so this is about also about shattering the illusion that there actually are any differences to the parties up there. And this, of course, obviously, you know, connects with a Hegelian dialectics that we might get into a little bit more later on when we speak about false flag operations and so forth. But again, this is a tactic that they use to set up these different camps to get people divided, I guess.
Yes.
Yeah.
And you mentioned a moment ago about America not having any royalty.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd like to comment on that, if I may.
Sure.
In the 2000 election, a man by the name of Harold Brooks Baker, who is the spokesperson for this genealogy service based out of England called Burke's Peerage, had made public statements to the effect that in every single American election, from George Washington, the very first president, all the way to George Bush Jr., the 43rd president, and this would include Hillary as the 44th president, every winner of every election, with no exceptions whatsoever, has been the candidate with the most ties to the royal bloodlines.
Except John Kerry, right? Wasn't that
John Kerry actually was related to royalty as well.
Yeah, but wasn't it that the only I totally agree with what you say, and I've heard this before also, of course. But I think that one report came out stating that John Kerry had more ties to royalty than George Bush actually did. I don't know if that's true, but the one so to speak turning away from this continuity in how things are being run in regards to connection with royalty bloodlines. George Bush was Jr. was the first president who won over someone who had more connections with royalty in Europe, I guess. So that might also say something in regards to how important it was for them to actually get Bush Jr. in as a president.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I don't know, but side note. But that's very interesting. And Do you think that again? Then we can tie this back to that these are the royalties of of United States, and they are the kings and queens, but not on the official level.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Unofficially and unrecognized as such, but nevertheless, they still do represent, relatives of Charlemagne and so forth.
Oh, it's amazing, yeah.
And anybody can go to Burke's Peerage website, and they do have a page that is devoted to the American presidents and their family trees. And anybody can examine this for themselves to verify that this is, in fact, the case here.
And there is also bloodline relations between George Bush and, if I'm not mistaken, John Kerry was in there too, but the relationship was, of course, to the historical character of Vlad the Impaler, or actually the one who mythically later become known as Dracula. Did you know that?
Yes, yes, that's correct.
That's some scary stuff, right?
Yeah, actually it's kind of plays into the ideas of how evil got into the political arena, as most prominently discussed by Michael Tsarian.
Sure, exactly, exactly. It's amazing. Yeah, it's right there. Okay, so let's see here. You know, one thing that you brought up in your article also was in regards to the IQ play, I call it, between Bush Jr. and Hillary, and on different topics, these personalities are presented as coherent in different ways, and I guess we could tie in this in regards to if the question is, in relations to war and Iraq and so forth, or if it's in some other area. Would you like to talk a little bit more about this IQ play between these two?
Yeah, what this is, I describe it as a very high-stakes game of good cop and bad cop. And this is, pretty much presented to us as, do you want your New World Order to be peaceful and friendly, or do you want it to be full of military might and so forth? And the way that these two people are being presented to the public through the media is in terms of how they deal with both sides of that very same issue. Because all political, high-level political people have to participate in this agenda to reach these high levels of power in the first place. And so we see George Bush Jr. as being a very lackadaisical type of a detached type of a character, although there's some pretty evil stuff going on behind the scenes. And in terms of Hillary Clinton, she's very upfront about what she believes. And as I bring out in this article, it's a lot of empty rhetoric, because she may, for example, talk about the fact that she would like American women to make a wage equal to men, when in fact she only tells half of that story. And she leaves out the entire part, which describes why women were forced into the workplace to begin with.
Yeah, sure.
And that was because the inflation through the Federal Reserve private banking system and currency had gotten to a point where a single paycheck could not support a family anymore.
Yeah.
But they brought this out as being, feminism, and we're going to be equal to men.
Sure, liberation.
When in fact it was anything but that.
Yeah.
And so when she gets elected, she's going to go about the business of continuing this agenda.
Yeah, absolutely, and things are never brought into historical context in that sense anymore. It's just on the focusing on the most recent issue and what's hip and what's not, and you know, as soon as that turn away or changes, they're gonna, you know, change with that trend also just as fast. So they're just the people's champions, I guess. They're just you know, it's amazing.
Yeah, the sleeping masses will follow.
Yeah, sure, exactly. That, and
Unfortunately.
that's the idea, I guess, of a democracy or a democracy, that if you have, you know, as the word implies, then a mob rule or people rule, that serves them perfectly well, because as long as they're in a position where they can rule the people, well, they at that point they don't bother, you know, if the people are, you know, the ones who actually are picking a presidential candidate, for example. But we can always take into account what you brought up in your article, and that is, of course, about all the vote fraud that goes on in regards to black box voting and all of this. And that's, again, is an area that that you said that Hillary had expressed some concern about in regards to vote fraud in the previous election. But again, she never tied this back to that, you know, that there are historical, I guess, or more references to it being, you know, fraud behind these elections, right?
Yeah, that's correct. This is a perfect example of how she's only telling half of the story here. Because, for example, she could have come out and said that the last two elections should not have been awarded to George Bush Jr. Because, as a matter of fact, and which is backed up by exit polling, it appears that very few people voted for him, and that Al Gore should be the president at this point. However, whether it's Al Gore or another 4 years of Junior, I don't think it matters much as long as the same type of legislation continues to go through.
Yeah, it's crazy, all right. You know, let's talk
No,
a little.
one other thing about Hillary that really disturbed me was that she was asked in April of 1993 in Parade Magazine, which is a Sunday supplement magazine in the Sunday newspaper here in America. What were the writings that most influenced her political thinking? And her answer to that was George Orwell in his book 1984 and Aldous Huxley in his book A Brave New World.
There we go.
And I was like, oh man, you got to be kidding me. This is bad news.
This is very interesting, and I think that this obviously, you know, connects with the recent, of course, you know, video that was released of the, you know, the original Macintosh advertisement was made in 1984. You know, in regards to all this, is this something that have gotten? It seems like over here, at least, that this is something that have gotten tremendous media attention over there. Is that right?
Yes, it has. In the past week, they've also come out and named the individual who was behind the creation of that ad. And as it turns out, it was a worker for one of these ad agencies who work with these political campaigns. And it wasn't for Senator Obama's campaign. It was just some guy who was working at one of these agencies, did this on his own time, and released this to the, I forget if it was YouTube or Google. They're both owned by the same people now.
Yeah,
So.
exactly. Yeah.
What, it was up there nonetheless.
Yeah, I think it was YouTube, but yeah, exactly. So, what's your take on that? I mean, it's fairly nice. It's quite nicely done, actually. It's you know, someone who had, you know, some knowledge about how to, you know, manipulate images and so forth. It's quite nice. I mean, you think that there is a hidden meaning in that sense? Is it a psyops? What's the deal with this ad?
Well, for one thing, it represents the thinking and the mindset of what I had begun to speak about today, with the lack of popularity that this woman has as a senator. And it shows exactly what people do think of her. They see her as being this big sister, if we can use that phrase for a moment, version of Big Brother.
Sure, yeah.
And so all the images of that mashup, if you will, of these images is very appropriate, and also puts across a message that's extremely serious, and people should be thinking very seriously about her as a candidate in the context of losing further freedoms as we go forward. And I have described Hillary as a Trojan horse for the New World Order. And what I mean by that is that her election is going to bring a lot of women into the thought that we finally had gotten a woman into the White House. This is the beginning of true equality of the sexes and so forth.
Sure.
And when in fact, it's just more of the same, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And that's unfortunate, again, being drawn into this because, you know, because just you're interested in more belonging to a group and get your kind of your side to win, I guess. And I think that it plays emotionally very, you know, strong with people. And in a sense, you know, if you're against Hillary, then you're, you know, against a woman president and stuff like this also. So you can play this on all kinds of level, in order to manipulate people emotionally to get them, you know, involved in this process. But, you know, one thing that we also wanted to get in here today is speaking a little bit about Hillary's, you know, Iraq exit strategy and so forth, and Hillary as I guess as a war president, because there is, you know, potential threats or potential a possibility, I should say, that you know there will be a strike on Iran and so forth. But what's your take on that? Do you think that, you know, if the war continues and if the U.S. still stays in Iraq, will Hillary be a person who can, you know, handle that, if I say it like that?
Well, as synchronicity has a habit of showing up at important points in my life, this very morning I received a letter from Hillary Clinton in response to a letter I had written to her about that very issue, the Iraq exit strategy idea. And in this letter, which is one page and one paragraph long, she describes not a complete pullout, which is what should happen. But by the way, the globalists have been building bases over there furiously.
So
I can't see them building all these military bases and then leaving them empty.
Sure.
No,
sure.
Doesn't make sense.
Absolutely.
But what she does say in this letter is just more of the same empty rhetoric. And she talks about how she seeks to halt the president's escalation policy with a bill that she has introduced called the Iraq Troop Protection and Reduction Act of 2007. And she goes down to say that, specifically, my bill would cap the number of troops in Iraq at the level before the president's escalation. It would be against the law to send more troops. The legislation also sets out to protect our troops who are performing heroically by prohibiting the use of funds to send them to Iraq unless they have the proper equipment and training. This is critical in light of February's Department of Defense Inspector General report, which concluded that the U.S. military is still failing to adequately equip our soldiers in both Iraq and Afghanistan. And I have military contacts that are current, and these individuals are telling me that they, in some instances, are being given Vietnam-era equipment to use.
Oh my God.
Which is completely outrageous.
Yeah.
Considering the high technology that has come into play since that time, 30, 35 years ago.
So.
And, you know, so Hillary basically wants to keep all the troops over there. She says that she doesn't want any more troops to be there, but you know, all we need is one more false flag situation, and as you just mentioned and posted the article by Webster Tarpley about this Operation Bite, April 6th sneak attack on Iran, which I have been told 3 months ago would be a one-day-long military airstrike. And that's exactly what is described in Tarpley's article.
Yeah. Do you think that okay, we're going to have a, as they call it, a surgical strike, you know, on a nuclear facility in Iran, or several, but if there is a long-term presence in Iran and moving into Iran before the 2008 election, do you think that Hillary still, you know, will be portrayed as a strong candidate, as a war president, you know, as George Bush, after all, has been kind of depicted as, I guess?
Well, I guess on one level, they will have to do that just to address the issue, if nothing else. And as I had mentioned, you know, in this letter that she had sent to me, it just is explaining that it's not going to be complete change, but just a very moderate tap into the opposite direction.
So she has gone out publicly, I guess, and stated that she's for the war, because I think at some point before that, the democratic side of all of this was, of course, to, you know, pull out of Iraq as soon as possible, basically. But slowly but surely, the strategy have changed, I guess, and now all sides of the political, you know, parties over there are, you know, for a prolonged presence in Iraq, I guess.
Yeah, that's very unfortunate. And the reason for this is that Iraq, Iran, Syria, China, Russia, all these countries have one thing in common, besides being mentioned in the PNAC, Rebuilding America's Defenses report of year 2000. Every one of those countries have made the attempt to move their global trade from the U.S. Federal Reserve dollar over to the euro currency. And Iran had done that recently. Iraq had, Saddam Hussein had done that just before they went to attack him. And of course, you know, big allies of Iran and also Korea is on this list as well. They are big allies with both China and Russia. So David Icke talked about how there would be a manipulated possibility, a very real possibility of a World War III as we get closer to 2012.
Indeed.
To kind of counteract the spiritual ascension that is associated with that December 21st date.
Sure, sure.
And to put as much fear and death and negativity into the world. And so all of these countries may be banding together to go against us. And if that happens, China, for example, their army is 200 million people.
Yeah.
You know, so we do not stand a chance here.
It's
over the long haul.
It's an army of biblical proportions, I guess.
Yes.
200 million. Yeah, it's amazing, you know. But in regards to that, I mean, do you have a view on things that, you know, that the same side controls, you know, China and Russia and that, you know, axis as the same, you know, side that controls the Western axis?
Yes, it does appear to be the case.
Yeah.
And, you know, when we get into the funding and where the funding comes from and so forth, we continuously make our way back to the bankers and to the Rothschilds and to the Rothschilds' American arm, the Rockefellers, are continuously mentioned in the research when you do look into these very deeply.
Yeah.
And so it does appear that on a very, very deep level, there is very tight control. And you talked about the Hegelian dialectic. This is the perfect expression of that concept, which has been popularized as problem-reaction-solution.
Indeed, indeed.
Which I think is perfect. I was very excited when David Icke brought that out.
Me too. Yeah, it's excellent strategy, and you know, I think that we're gonna speak more about that in our next segment when we're going to dive into our, you know, your article, Anatomy of a False Flag Terror Attack. But one thing I just wanted to kind of squeeze in before here we round things off for this segment. Hillary claims that her all-time favorite film is The Wizard of Oz, and considering what we talked about, you know, in our first show that we did, this is quite an interesting statement, right?
Yeah, I sure thought it was.
Yeah, can imagine. Yeah.
The first thing I thought of when I read that gem was poor Chelsea. You know what she must have went through in terms of, you know, the trauma-based mind control conditioning that these children of these elite groups are put through and put forth upon them. And you know, there's so much occultism in that movie and in those books by Baum that it's no real big surprise, actually, that someone like her would be so interested in a story like that. Because, you know, she's already been identified as being a witch in the Illuminati on the Mothers of Darkness level, which is the sixth level of the hierarchy. And this ties into the fact that the Mothers of Darkness castle in Belgium is a very close approximation of this Cinderella castle at the Disney theme parks.
What is called Neuschwanstein, I think it's called, or something like that, the castle or the area that this castle is from, which is modeled from the Disney castle. That's the one you mean, right? By the way, do you think that, you know, Hillary is basically, if I can use that expression here, a mind-controlled clone, basically? Or do you think that she has more, could she be more aware than that, so to speak?
That's a good question. I would think after doing the reading that I have done on this, on the mind control and the MK Ultra program in particular, Project Monarch, and all of that, which was brought out through the congressional hearings in 1977 here in America, that the type of conditioning that they undergo begins when they're very early children, and by the time they get to their adult years, they are so manipulated and so mind-controlled and so brainwashed that that actually lays the groundwork for them growing up to be controllers themselves. And so this appears to be the role that, at least behind the scenes, that she does play in a big way. And it's, you know, something that you'll never hear anybody like that admit.
No.
But it's very, very interesting that I got the two Fritz Springmeier books, The Illuminati Formula to Create a Non-Identified Mind Control Slave and the Deeper Insights into the Illuminati Formula, those two books. And I do know an individual who was part of this program, and the part of the book that has all the codes and the triggers and all of the different signs and codes and so forth, I went through that list with this individual, and she knew every single thing on that list. So that verified to me that that was real information. And so when Mr. Springmeier was basically manipulated and thrown into prison for this crime that he did not commit, or at least was manipulated into committing if he did play a part.
Wasn't this involvement in some kind of bank robbery or something like
yeah,
that?
Yeah, it was supposed to be a bank robbery.
Yeah.
But the man's a lifelong Christian. He was a Christian author and a lifelong pacifist. So this doesn't make sense that he would even do something like that.
Sure.
It's so out of character. But if you look at it in terms of he brought out some serious shit that they do not want going public, then that situation makes perfect sense in that context.
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, I think this will be a perfect place to kind of round off this segment, and I guess we could kind of end things off as we began with your paragraph stating that, you know, I will be here every step of the way, where at appropriate times throughout the campaign I will comment and describe what is happening. And I guess that, you know, that this is a story that continues and will of course continue to develop. So it's great to have you here to be able to, you know, help us dissect the mediocrity of how they will present this as a you know, the next president, I guess. So again, thank you very much for this segment, Kent. But before we finish off, tell us about your website so people are able to find you and your work.
My website is controversypapers.net, and when you go to that website, on the very front page, in the right-hand column sidebar, is a section called Controversy Special Reports. This is what I would like people to begin with on my website. There are many very important things on that list, and they explain many aspects of the situations that we are living through right now at this very moment. And so if they go to that special report section, they will find some very interesting stuff there. And also I have this morning put up a link for them to sign up for my mailing list as well.
Yeah, excellent. I saw that. So everybody, do check it out, controversypapers.net. Excellent stuff. And we will take a short break, Kent, and we'll see each other on the other end. For all you guys in and around the Stockholm area, don't miss the remote viewing lecture with Lynn Buchanan this coming Tuesday. Head on over to soultravel.se to find out more about that, and perhaps we'll see each other there. All right, we are going to continue our talk with Kent in the subscriber section now. Very important stuff on the tactics, or the MO, if you will, of false flag operations. So very good stuff and important material with Kentroversy coming right up. For all you guys out there who tune into this show and are not yet subscribing, I hope you do consider supporting us and signing up with us. We do need your help and support, not only to continue what we do here, but also to grow and expand as well. So sign up for 6 months, try it out. You'll get full access to our archive with the subscriber interviews going back to September last year. The cost is $23 or €17 for a 6 month subscription, and that's about 12 US cents a day. So skip the last half of your night out on the town next time or whatever, and do something good and help us out with what we do here. And remember that you do not need a PayPal account or a credit card to sign up. Just check out our alternative payments. Alright, that's enough of that, and I want to say thank you so much for listening to the program, and thanks to Fredrik Palmgren behind the audio controls. We will be back this Thursday with our regular Christopher Morse plus guests, so a lot of fun coming up. This is Henrik Palmgren, upwards and onwards. Make sure to spend some time in the spring sun. Talk later.